You're listening to the first Apple Pest Update of 2021. Today is March 31st, and it definitely feels like spring out there. For pictures or links to some of the things I'm referring to today, check out the blog post for this update. So, let's talk first orchard sanitation. It's the first line of defense for pest management in the orchard. There's no silver bullet to eradicating something like disease once it becomes well established. So it means that management's a year-long process to reduce inoculum in the orchard and prevent the spread to healthy trees or fruit. Some of these practices are things like pruning out dead or diseased branches, like for fire blight, removing rotten or mummified fruit that often harbor overwintering pests like black rot or bitter rot, getting rid of wood or cull piles and stumps that may have provided overwintering sites for insects like codling moth or plum curculio, or even cleaning up the orchard floor of leaves, branches, and fruit. So let's talk specifically about some of the pests that we might be thinking about this time of year. So let's start, fire blight. If you haven't already, early spring's a good opportunity to clean up any remaining infected limbs, cankers, or, in the case of rootstock blight, trees that will act as sources of inoculum, and get as much of that fire blight out of the orchard as possible. These overwintering cankers will be the source of disease in the coming year, as the bacteria is actually sitting in the vascular tissue in the canker margins. And as the tree begins to push in the spring, these cankers then become active, and the bacterial cells start to multiply. Generally, as temperatures increase above 18 degrees Celsius, those enlarging cankers, they start oozing this bacterial-laden sap that may or may not be visible. The bacteria, though, are carried by insects or rain splash to developing tissue, whether that's blossoms or shoot tips. So dormant pruning is effective for many reasons. So firstly, the fire blight pathogen, Erwinia amblyvora, is not active in cold temperatures, and therefore it won't spread on pruning shears, on tools, or in infected tissue. This means there's no need to disinfect tools between cuts like what you would do during the summer. And secondly, the cankers are just easier to see in the orchard without foliage blocking or shading your view. So spend some time, if you haven't already, thoroughly scouting for cankers while you're pruning. Try to do this more than once in the early spring, and ideally at different times during the day so that you have different light direction, allowing you to see some cankers you may have missed before. And yes, this sounds like a lot of work, but the extra work may save you trees down the road by removing those inoculum sources. Shoot blight can be pretty easily identified by that characteristic shepherd's crook or that J-shaped limb that happens. And since the limb is dead, then oftentimes blighted leaves will remain on the limb throughout the winter, making it a little bit more obvious for you to see this spring. Cankers, though, may not be as obvious. They can vary in size on twigs, limbs, or trunks of trees, but the typical characteristics of fire blight cankers include things like sunken or wrinkled areas with a narrow ridge along the margin, and oftentimes you'll see cracks around or within those margins. The bark is often rough or darkened. Sometimes that inner bark can appear reddish or brown. And as we start to warm up in the season, you'll start to possibly see that sticky amber ooze coming out from those margins, especially during those humid conditions. And with that, because it's a sugary substance, black sooty mold loves to grow on these sort of things, and so the canker may eventually start to develop a black appearance as it ages. Oftentimes, cankers can be found around spurs, wounds, or pruning stubs, so do take some extra time to check those areas. And also be prepared that sometimes cankers can become colonized by other fungi, so things like black rot. So you may start to see symptoms from that as well, things like peeling bark. When you find a canker, do your best to get it out. So pruning cuts should be made at least 30 centimeters or 12 inches beyond the canker or the visible infected tissue, ideally into second year wood. But when the canker extends near or up to that main leader, you'll have to kind of make a decision. You could risk making just the limb cut and hope the bacteria hasn't spread further. You could cut the trunk below the canker and encourage a new leader, or depending on various factors, including things like tree age, size, vigor, you could just leave it as is and see what happens during the season. However, for young trees, especially those less than 3 years old, trees that seem to just get infection year after year, or trees that have an obvious canker established in the trunk should just be removed altogether. Mulch those limbs in the row middles now if you don't want to remove limbs entirely to burn them. And an application of urea applied at this time for apple scab may also help with degradation as well. Trees with rootstock blight should be removed as soon as possible to remove any chance of further spread. Cut off and remove the scion from the orchard, but make sure to leave enough to allow the roots to be pulled out. Leave the remaining trunk just to let things dry up a little bit more before you remove it before the start of the season. So early spring is also a time to start thinking about in-season fire blight management because, as we know, bloom can come pretty quickly. Having products ready and at your fingertips will allow you to act fast should conditions for infection occur. Believe me, you don't want to get caught unprepared. So some things to think about. Try and have enough control product to cover all rows of susceptible blocks every 3 days during bloom. Your best estimate of how long bloom would be. Make it a goal maybe to become acquainted or perhaps just refresh your memory with forecasting models like Cougar Blight or Mary Blight. If you don't want to run those models yourself on your farm, you could also bookmark the Ontario Fire Blight prediction maps in your browser for quick reference during bloom. So these maps are updated 3 times per week with a 7-day predicted risk forecast. And as I said earlier, these links are provided in the actual blog, so feel free to check that out to get those. But overall, make a plan for management. So consider things like, what products are you going to use? Consider your options. You've got antibiotics like streptomycin and casimin. There's copper like Queva. Biologicals are things like Blossom Protect, Serenade, Double Nickel, Lifeguard. Or are you going to use Apogee at all? So the next question then is, how will you use them? Keep in mind, Lifeguard should be applied prior to bloom and again at petal fall. Biologicals often need to be applied preventatively ahead of an infection to give time to multiply or invade the area or initiate a plant response. And for antibiotics, a good resistance management practice is chemistry rotation. So how is that going to look in your system and when are you going to be starting that rotation? Don't forget to consider your action plan in case of trauma blight as well. It's important to get out there within hours after the traumas occur to prevent any sort of infection. So having that product on hand and being able to use it immediately is so critical. But first and foremost, we're at the timing now to apply a dormant copper spray between silver tip to half inch green to help protect the spread of bacteria from any oozing cankers that were missed while you were doing that dormant pruning. So the effectiveness of a dormant copper spray, it really comes down to how it's applied and post-application weather. So copper provides basically an unfriendly environment over the bark and bud surfaces of the tree, preventing bacteria from getting established or spreading. So it's best applied as a high-volume spray to really ensure that sufficient coverage. Dormant copper like Copper Spray, Copper 53W, Queva, Parasol, these can be safely applied up to about a 1/4 inch green, possibly even 1/2 inch green, without the risk of phytotoxicity. However, the use of a softer copper registered for season-long control, like Queva, could be extended into those early spray timings to 1/2 inch green or possibly even tight cluster in blocks with a low scab inoculum. So in other words, you didn't have scab last year, to maybe provide some early season scab protection. Residual activity though for coppers will typically last about 7 to 10 days under ideal spring conditions. But once rainfall exceeds 2 inches from the last copper application, it should just be assumed that residue's been washed off. You could also use 1% to 2% dormant oil, unless the label states otherwise, to act as a bit of a sticker spreader to help with the dormant copper, as well as provide efficacy on scale, European red mite, and suppression of powdery mildew. However, Queva is formulated with a fatty acid, so there's little benefit to adding oil as a sticker for this product. Keep in mind, though, if you are using dormant oil, don't apply Captain or sulfur products within 14 days of application, since oil can actually enhance penetration of these products into those sensitive tissues, and you can have some phytotoxicity issues resulting. There's also some other cautions around the use of oil, but I'll discuss them later on. Moving along, though, with early season disease control, something that's practical and inexpensive is inoculum-reducing strategies like urea or mowing. These can be such important components to an effective scab management program and really contribute to the reduction of overwintering ascospores that will infect green tissue at the start of the season. Really important right now, too, given the fact that we're losing some of those uses for our early season scab products. So research from New Hampshire has looked at the impact of inoculum pressure on primary scab infection. An orchard with 20% overwintering leaf scab had the potential to produce 7,000 times more ascospores than an orchard with less than 1% overwintering leaf scab. So the big picture is that by reducing that initial scab pressure going into the season, you can save time and money that you usually invest in fungicide applications. So for instance, in a typical year, only a small portion of ascospores are actually mature early season. So by reducing the scab pressure, you're therefore reducing the risk of infection and the potential need for chemical control at those early stages like at green tip. Also thinking, scab spores don't travel far, and most infections start from within the orchard. So again, getting the inoculum out reduces that risk of infection. The other thing to consider is that most fungicides tend to work better in low inoculum orchards, particularly when dealing with our Ontario spring weather. And the trend right now in new product registration is towards single-site fungicides, which have high resistance potential. So by reducing that scab inoculum means there's less selection pressure placed on those products. In other words, you get to use them for longer. So the first thing I mentioned for reducing scab inoculum is applying urea. So urea works in a number of ways. Firstly, it directly inhibits the development of ascospores. It also stimulates the growth of naturally occurring organisms that are antagonistic against the scab fungicide. And it helps to facilitate the breakdown of leaves. Researchers from the University of New Hampshire showed a 97% reduction in ascospore productivity in leaves sprayed with urea in the fall just before leaf drop. A 50% reduction when urea was applied to the leaf litter in the fall when approximately 95% of the leaves had dropped. And a 70% reduction when urea was applied in the spring to the leaf litter. So if you haven't done so already this spring, consider applying 45 kilograms of agricultural urea per 1,000 liters of water per hectare to the orchard floor, ideally before bud break. In addition to a urea application, scab inoculum can also be reduced 80 to 90% by shredding overwintering leaves. Rake or blow the leaves from under the trees and shred them using a flail mower. So this actually helps to encourage leaf decay. And it may also reorient the leaves to prevent spores from discharging up into the trees. Turning gears a little bit to insecticides, I had mentioned earlier the use of dormant oil. Spring-applied dormant oil can seem at times a risky game to play, hoping the right growth stage will align with the right weather conditions. But by preparing early for the spray and following the forecasted weather, dormant oil can be an effective tool for managing some pretty difficult-to-control pests. So a quick side note here, though. Over the years, there's been some questions whether oil may reduce the overall health of the tree. To date, there is no scientific evidence to support these claims. Oil has been used for many years across apple-growing regions to control various overwintering pests, and there have been no ill effects on the health of the tree when oil is applied properly. So how does it work? Oil sprays work mainly by suffocation. Coating the insect, which means a high-volume spray to reach all those cracks in the tree bark, it prevents normal respiration. So this works best on immobile and immature stages because, one, the insect can't move away from the spray. Two, the scale coverings have still not hardened and oil can actually penetrate. And three, respiration rate is the highest in these immature stages. However, oil can also interfere with egg development, it can prevent settling of scale crawlers, and it can also deter feeding by pests such as aphids. So this is also why summer oil programs are so worthwhile. So what pests does dormant oil actually target? Firstly, a dormant oil application is going to go after your scale pests. Most common around the province is San Jose scale, but some people may also have problems with oyster shell scale, European scale, Lycanium. So scale overwinters as an immature and begins to wake up just prior to bud break. As the immature scales feed, they exude this waxy substance that forms this protective layer or shell over top. So dormant oils are the best timing because they're applied before this waxy covering is formed. Without the foliage to block the spray, dormant oil applications can get reasonable coverage of limbs and trunks where the overwintering scale population is located. Targeting individuals at this stage will help reduce the population that will be producing the summer generation crawlers. Post-bloom management targets these crawlers which move from the infested area to maturing fruit. These sprays can be really effective at reducing the amount of fruit damage, but they don't always provide good control of the crawlers that move elsewhere, such as to new branches, a different spot on the trunk, or to an adjacent tree. In other words, you could find yourself in this continuous cycle of managing fruit damage if the scale population is not suppressed. While it may be hard to find time and good weather early season, an oil application is well worth it. The other key pest targeted for dormant oils is European red mite, which actually overwinters as eggs on roughened bark around the base of buds and spurs, or in the inner parts of the tree close to the main trunk and branches. Oil sprays should be applied before egg hatch, which is typically between half-inch green and tight cluster. While delayed dormant oil applications primarily target scale and mites, you may see some additional efficacy against other pests at this timing, including impeding egg hatch and movement of aphids and some spring-feeding caterpillars, interfering with egg laying and development of apple leaf curling midge, and preventing the release of overwintering powdery mildew spores as infected buds open. So depending on the target pest, the term dormant oil can be rather misleading, as sprays can be applied from, you know, the true dormant state prior to bud break, all the way up until pink. Unfortunately, though, optimal dormant timing for scale is not necessarily the same as for mites. So if your monitoring from last year indicated that scale is a bigger issue in the orchard, oils need to be applied before or shortly after bud break. In other words, now, if you're in the earlier parts of the province. This efficacy against scale is significantly reduced with later oil applications for red mite, as by that point in time, they've already developed that waxy protective layer that impedes the oil then from effectively penetrating and preventing the respiration. If European red mite populations were the problem last year, consider delaying your sprays, ideally to about half-inch green to tight cluster, but you can push it back even further to pink. However, blossoms can be quite sensitive to oil under adverse conditions, so consider using a lower rate at that timing, maybe taking it down to a 1%. Original precautions around the use of dormant oil were developed prior to the refinement processes that are carried out now with commonly registered products. Most impurities that were associated with the phytotoxic effects with some of those older, heavier horticulture oils are removed now through extra filtration and distillation. If you have concerns using oil, especially with sensitive varieties like Red Delicious, Empire, Mutsu, and Ambrosia, maybe consider a product such as Pure Spray Green, as it's registered for both dormant and summer use. However, even highly refined summer oils can cause crop injury when they're applied either at temperatures that are below 4 or 5 degrees, when they're applied within 48 hours before or after a freezing event, in slow drying or prolonged wet conditions, when they're used with or too close to products containing sulfur and captan. Try as much as possible to keep a 14-day period before and after these products. You may also see some issues if you're applying above the labeled rate. Ideally, about a 2% solution or 20 liters per 1,000 liters of water for dormant spray, and about a 1% solution or 10 liters per 1,000 liters of water for a summer spray. And again, ensure those high water volumes because you need that good coverage to really soak the bark, which is where those pests are found. While this may not apply early season, it is important to also consider that oils can cause phytotoxicity when they're applied to plants under moisture stress or when temperatures are high, so basically above 25 degrees Celsius. The important thing with oil, as with every product, always read the product label for any instructions or precautions. The last thing I wanted to touch on today is this mild winter that we've had and what we could be expecting with the pest pressure. So in a typical winter, insect populations often experience winter kill to some degree, depending on many factors within the microclimate of the orchard, things like air drainage, snow cover, extreme temperature. However, in a mild winter like what we just had, where we had really few cold snaps here and there, overwintering survival for most insects is pretty likely. Even with an extremely cold winter, favorable weather early in the spring, like what we're experiencing right now, can easily compensate for those pests that survived and may lead to early emergence. So with a warm, dry spring, we could see a quick emergence of European red mite, rosy apple aphid, tarnished plant bug, apple leaf curling midge, and mullein bug. Mother Nature typically doesn't give us much reprieve from overwintering disease in a typical year, since inoculum is often well protected from cold weather in things like infected branches or cankers, like with fire blight, in leaves on the orchard floor, like with apple scab, in dead wood or mummified fruit on the tree or on the grounds, like black rot or bitter rot, or an alternate host that's then carried in from other areas on the wind, like rust. The exception to this, though, would be powdery mildew, which overwinters as mycelium in dormant fruit and shoot buds that were infected the previous season. So Canidia grows out of the buds in the spring as infected tissue and spreads to other leaves, causing secondary infection. Overwintering powdery mildew-infected shoots actually lack winter hardiness. And so in a cold winter, with temperatures below minus 24 degrees Celsius, the survival rate is generally less than 5%. Unfortunately, with the mild winter, growers who had problems with powdery mildew last year should probably anticipate survival of those infected buds and be prepared for early prevention this season of powdery mildew, in addition to those previous diseases I just mentioned. And that's it for the Apple Pest Update for March 31st, 2021. Again, for pictures or for the links that I mentioned earlier, check out the blog post for this update. And stay tuned in April comes the next pest update.